He kind of started all the plants growing, and he started people. Well, I guess he's kind of big and fat.
He can see us whatever we do. Whatever we do, he has such powerful eyes. He doesn't have millions and thousands and billions. And he can still see us when we're bad.
He could be sitting on the table right now, but you can't see him.
He can't be everywhere at once doing everything for everybody. Everybody can't get what they want.
Welcome to the live broadcast today, ladies and gentlemen. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on the 21st of August, 2023. My name is David Stovenel. My effort is to restore Christianity in America. It's called Operation Restore Christian America. This is a call-in live broadcast. The call-in phone number is 608-433-9306. My website is genuinechristianitynow.com. There are several ebooks on there that are extremely important to read, including the KJV authorized version for English speaking and reading people in the world, and several other books that have to do with contemporary events. Today I will be reading during the second half of the hour from Hidden Secrets of the Alpha Course, The Dark Agenda Behind Alpha. This is a 2005 copyright of this particular book. And very few people talk about it or are aware of the contents of it. That is absolutely shocking to me, because within this book is described the hierarchy of the Lucifer-worshipping Satanists. And in order to defeat an enemy, first you have to identify the enemy. So that will be the second half, but the first half of this broadcast has to do with reading of the scriptures, which is the most pure way to pray. Anyway, on my website, as I mentioned, there are ebooks. There are several books posted. There's also a recording of this broadcast after the show is completed. And there is an archive of past broadcasts that you'll want to listen to as well, because I do things in a series in order to bring a better comprehension about a specific subject matter. Additionally, there is a donate button. I very much thank those of you that have donated, and I encourage you to do so, especially because of the effort that I've initiated for a class action lawsuit to bring remedy to eliminate the institutionalized discrimination against literally all people in America at this point, but specifically and primarily veterans. And incidentally, veterans cuts across all lines and all people groups. So this isn't a white thing, a black thing, a transvestite thing, a man thing, a woman thing. There are all different people that participate in military service to this nation, as well as political service and employees of the political people in the government. But as I said, it's saturated this discrimination, this institutionalized discrimination has saturated our society at this point, because it is so unheard of and overlooked, and people take it for granted that it's just normal for abuses to be perpetrated against especially veterans that have just returned, for the most part, for the majority of those veterans. But the few that are elevated, they are very few in number for those that are recognized for doing honorable service to the country and then receiving a decent job or being recognized in another way, business or whatever. So once again, your donations for this effort, that's where the donations go toward, is toward this effort to erase institutionalized discrimination that is subversive, vicious, fierce, and deadly for all Americans. Because if you destroy honorable veterans, in other words, the opportunities that are provided for everyone in a fair and just system, if that's destroyed, then the entire society becomes destroyed. And that is what is taking place. So anyway, thank you for listening in today. And here we go with Chapter 5 in Ecclesiastes. The name of the broadcast today is Solomon and the Book of Ecclesiastes, Part 5. And I name it Part 5 because it is Chapter 5. Keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy words be few. For a dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin. Neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thine hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words there are also divers vanities. But fear thou God. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter. For he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Behold that which I have seen. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God, for he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. That's the end of chapter 5 in Ecclesiastes. And I think there is so much profound good advice there, and such a deep perception of life and what would be called covetousness and the prevention of it by not hoarding away for tomorrow that which is necessary to provide that which will bring about a day that has a pleasantness about it, as opposed to what King Solomon called travail and vanity. Anyway, moving on to John, the Gospel of John, chapter 5 in the New Testament, and it's called a New Testament for a reason. It did not abolish the Old Testament. The New Testament fulfilled the law and made the Old Testament only a teaching tool to learn and appreciate and accept the perfect sacrifice of Jesus Christ for all of us that believe on his name and say Jesus is Lord. Anyway, chapter 5, the Gospel of John. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews, therefore, said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He that honoreth not the Son honoreth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself, and hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which has sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesseth of me is true. Ye sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from man, but these things I say that ye may be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in his light. But I have greater witness than that of John, for the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself, which hath sent me, hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape. And ye have not his word abiding in you, for whom he has sent, him ye believe not. Search the scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. And ye will not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words? That is the end of the reading of chapter 5 in the Gospel of John. It is interesting to study the Gospel of John very carefully, because as you can see and as you can comprehend by reading and studying the Gospel of John, there was no manipulation within the exchanges. These were direct conversations from both aspects, the unbelieving Jews and Jesus. And yes, there were Jews that believed in Jesus, but they were no longer Jews at that point. They became Christians. They believed on Christ. And that's wherewith we have to this day utilized the name Christian. Anyway, your comments are definitely welcome. Call-in number is 608-433-9306. Last week, I began reading from one of the books that is posted on genuinechristianitynow.com, which I have earlier said describes Satan, or the Luciferian hierarchy, Satan's hierarchy in the world that began long before any of us were born. And it's in the book Hidden Secrets of the Alpha Course, which is simple to locate at genuinechristianitynow.com. So I'm going to chapter 11, and I'm reading it throughout because it was interrupted by the end of the broadcast last week, so I'm starting a little earlier. Chapter 11, Anglo-American Protestant Nazis. While most people nowadays know the Nazi swastika and Waffen-SS runes and the like used by the Third Reich were all Luciferian occult symbols, back in 1933, very few people then recognized them as such. The public display of the swastika was not confined to within the borders of Nazi Germany during the 1930s, and sympathizers and affiliated organizations abroad existed almost completely undisturbed because the public did not recognize the evil associated with them. In Britain, often, the Union Jack could be seen flying alongside the Nazi emblem that would one day enslave Europe. Yet, most people did not even have the slightest inkling about what was soon to happen. Had the German nation understood the Luciferianism behind their carefully chosen emblems on their flags and banners, they never would have worshipped an Antichrist figure like Hitler so quickly and without question. Most of the leading Nazis were Roman Catholics, and many of the Third Reich symbols were adapted from the paganism of ancient Imperial Rome, preserved in the occult ritual in the Roman Catholic Church. Good examples of these were the German eagle, really the old Roman Imperial eagle symbol of Jupiter, and the Nazi fasces, a bundle of rods bound by the helve of an axe and borne by the Roman magistrates in symbol of their authority at once to scourge and decapitate. The bundle of rods or sticks represented the Roman United Nations, provinces or regions joined together under the Roman governments dictatorial authority that was enforced by penalty of decapitation, symbolized by the axe head. The fasces symbol was used as the emblem of the Fascist Party in modern Italy. It was used as a principal symbol of the Nazi Third Reich, and whenever Hitler spoke at his major rallies, the eagle mace and Roman fasces were usually positioned immediately behind him when he was standing on the speaker's podium. We often wonder how ignorant the German nation must have been to be so easily deceived to worship such an overtly evil administration. Yet now, the very same thing is happening once again on a global scale, but this time it is being led by representatives of the Protestant Church of England, Germany, Russia, and the United States, all of whose administrations are now symbolized by the Roman Eagle. Now the Roman Eagle is mounted on the U.S. mace that symbolizes the power and authority of the United States government. It stands beside the Speaker's rostrum when the U.S. House of Representatives is in session. On the wall at the back of the Speaker's rostrum, on both sides, standing about 2 meters high, are a pair of Nazi fasces, which indicate that there is a U.S. Gestapo at once to scourge and decapitate coming. Both these fasces, mounted in the U.S. Capitol building, come directly not from Rome, but from the Queen's Nazi gold state coach in London. Hitler's Waffen-SS, now U.S. Homeland Security Department. The Allgemeine and Waffen-SS was the Nazi forerunner and German equivalent of what is now called the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. President George W. Bush, Jr. created the Homeland Security Act on November 19, 2002, which established the Homeland Security Department in March 2003, which merged 22 separate government agencies under the one department. One of the agencies brought under Homeland Security was the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, that over the past 15 years or so has built an elaborate system of giant concentration camp facilities across the United States. Why use the term Homeland Security? The German word Heimatland, Homeland, was relentlessly used by Hitler to deceive the masses. This was the issue. Defend your homeland, the Third Reich. PM Tony Blair's often used phrase, the Third Way, is the British Fabian socialist equivalent of the Nazi Third Reich. In German, Allgemein means overall, Waffen means weapons, and SS is the acronym for Sicherheitsdienst, which means security service. The parade standard of Waffen-SS Division Liebstandart Adolf Hitler, Liebstandart means bodyguard, included a swastika inside a circle surmounted by a Roman eagle, emblem of Jupiter, below which was another swastika on a banner. Now, this very same Nazi eagle is the demonic emblem of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And the two Nazi swastikas of the Waffen-SS have now both been deceptively put together inside the circle, crossed, and form the hidden inspiration behind the Marxist 5-point star on the U.S. Homeland Security Weather Service emblem, which brazenly symbolizes that this is the agency which will inevitably soon oversee the final New World Order global Holocaust under British control. If this seems difficult to believe, why not check it out? The Homeland Weather Service is operated in a public-private partnership. Public-private partnerships, PPPs, which are the privatization of the most sensitive, publicly owned assets of the world are the creation of the Prince of Wales International Business Leaders Forum, whose CEO is Jane Nelson, a former Rhodes Scholar, headed by Prince Charles himself. This book is copyright 2005, incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, and it can be located and read at genuinechristianitynow.com at your convenience. Queens, Nazi Gold State Coach. On June 4th, 2002, during the Queen's Golden Jubilee procession from Buckingham Palace to the Ecumenical Multi-Faith Service at St. Paul's in the City of London, the Protestant monarch was carried in her gold state coach to the venue. The coach is gold because it symbolizes that the British sovereign fulfills the role of the Babylonian sun god. The cabin of the coach is supported and carried by four statues of the Roman god Neptune, with the two rear statues of Neptune carrying the Nazi fasces, which were once carried by the Roman lictors under the edict at once to scourge and decapitate. For years, hundreds of years in fact, the British people have been worshipping a Nazi sovereign. The present Nazi queen, Queen Elizabeth II, is not British, but German. Until her family conveniently changed their name to the House of Windsor in 1917, as a result of the First World War with Germany, they were called the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, a German royal bloodline going back to the black nobility of Venice, Lombardy, which in turn is descended from Rome and Babylon. This charade is simply the tip of the iceberg and the culmination of hundreds of years of Christianized paganism in England. Isn't it about time somebody woke up? Of course, the corrupt Roman Catholic Church is deeply involved. But is it really the Roman Catholic Church and Holy See in Rome that is the real arch enemy of mankind, as many believe? Or is it a devious Nazi sovereign who heads the City of London Corporation, World Freemasonry, and the Church of England, the very occult organizations which spawned the UN, EU, Royal Institute of International Affairs, and World Council of Churches, etc., whose secret aim is to form a Luciferian one-world church and government, and whose members are now the very same people who coordinate and run the Alpha Course from Holy Trinity Brompton in London. The Queens, Merchants of the Sea, .3. And every shipmaster and all accompanying ships and sailors, and as many as trade by sea, .. That's from Revelation chapter 18, verse 17. On June 4th, 2002, during her golden Jubilee procession, when she was carried into the City of London Corporation in her gold state coach by the two demonic Roman small g gods, Mercury and Neptune, whose four statues carry and support the entire cabin, volumes of pagan ritual were symbolized by the event. Mercury was the Roman god of the merchants of the earth. He was also, appropriately, the god of thieves. Neptune was the god of the sea. The reason why these two demonic Roman gods carry the British sovereign into the City of London Corporation is because Neptune, as god of the sea, was always required to assist Mercury in his endeavors as supreme god of merchants and merchant bankers in Rome to control the world financial system, as does the City of London Corporation today. Remember in Mark chapter 11, verses 15 to 18, how Jesus cast out them that sold and bought in the temple and accused them of turning God's house into a den of thieves. Could it be possible that these sanctimonious epithets of Protestantism in London are doing very much the same? In Imperial Rome, at the celebration of the first lectisterium in 399 BC, after the consultation of the Sibylline books by the Duumviri Sacris Faciundus, Mercury and Neptune were grouped into a heterogeneous pair on account of their close relationship with sea and trade. Mercury was the patron of merchants. The name Mercury derives from merx, which means merchandise. The consecration of his temple was associated with the creation of a brotherhood of merchants in Rome. Thus, Mercury was also the god of the Roman Empire's commerce and the Roman World Trade Organization. Mercury Hermes represented trade, which benefited from the maritime assistance of Neptune, two demonic gods which now preside in the City of London Corporation, City of London Masonic Guildhall Companies. Bernard E. Jones, in the Freemason's Guide and Compendium, outlines how English Freemasonry developed out of the old English medieval Roman Catholic guilds to become what it is today in the City of London and the Church of England. Guildhall in the City of London Corporation, with its 12 great livery companies and their many subsidiaries that now controls the wealth of the world, grew out of these old Masonic guilds. Guild comes from a Saxon word, gildan, meaning simply to pay. Thus, when we say a city is gilded, we simply mean that it paid its taxes. The word gildable meant liability to pay tax. Many of the churches and colleges around Britain still have associations with Guildhall's livery companies to this very day. In writing about the Knight Guild or Knights Guild in pages 61 to 62 of his book, Bernard E. Jones has this to say. Apparently, at some time in the 10th century or earlier, there were guilds governed by a council of 13 members, including a presiding officer, the number based upon Christ and the 12 apostles. It is believed that one such guild was governed by 12 men plus a woman president who represented the Virgin Mary. The Knighton, also Newton or Neaton, guild was governed by 13 and may originally have been a secular guild, the tradition being that King Edgar gave a portion of land on the east part of the City of London to 13 knights who had gloriously performed certain combat prescribed by him, and that this land is the Portsoken ward of the City of London. Portsoken meaning franchise at the gate, the subject of a written charter granted by Edward the Confessor to the Knighton Guild. Early in the 12th century, the land and the franchise went to the canons of Holy Trinity, London. The guild became extinct. In writing about the London Company of Freemason in page 76 of his book, Bernard E. Jones continues, at the company's own petition, its rules were altered and the livery obliged to assemble each year on or near the Feast of Holy Trinity, and there chose among themselves a master for the ensuing year, who may be a direction to ye wardens for the better government of the company, and also to choose two honest, able, and discreet persons to be wardens for 1 year, these officers to be presented in the chamber of the guild hall and there sworn and charged. Thus, it may be seen that the Alpha Course promoted by Holy Trinity Brompton in London goes very much deeper than first meets the eye. Originally, the old Roman Catholic dioceses that owned much of the land in Britain were established and run as the world's first corporations. Later, they were taken over by the Masonic knights and barons in the city of London under the overall authority of the sovereign and the Church of England, and now they control the world. The modern business world's monopolistic company and corporation system, in essence, is a direct product of the greed collectively inspired by apostate Jews and Christians domiciled in the City of London Corporation. This explains why there has always been an incestuous relationship between City of London Corporation Jews, the Church of England, and the Roman Catholic Church, and is the very reason why Ken Costa, vice chairman of UBS Warburg, a senior City of London Jewish banker, just happens to worship at Holy Trinity Brompton, and is also the chairman of Alpha Partners, the international funding division of the Alpha Course. City of London, Roman Den of Thieves. In the list of 12 Roman deities as arranged by Virgil, Caesar was proposed as a 13th. Of the 12 principal livery companies in Guildhall in the City of London, which are privatizing and taking over ownership of the entire world under the direction of City of London bankers, one of the chief being UBS Warburg, the Queen fulfills the role of Caesar as the 13th. Ultimately, the City of London bankers and Lord Mayor are under her supreme authority. If the Queen's supreme authority were ever transferred to Prince Charles, then it is he who would inevitably own the entire world. Jesus said, "For who shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" In English, the word Charles means a man. And here's a little shout-out to King Charles Windsor III. Repent, wicked sinner, you covetous dog. Washington, D.C., a sub-branch of the City of London Corporation. Virtually all U.S. federal government and government departments operate under British Maritime Law, Admiralty Law. In U.S. federal courtrooms today, there is usually a yellow or gold-fringed U.S. or state flag which signifies a planting of British Maritime Law of the forum, the court, into each dispute brought before the court. Treasonous U.S. judges know this to be true. When a gold-fringed U.S. flag is flown, it signifies British control of the Union. As part of the District of Columbia Corporation, all U.S. federal government departments and agencies are ultimately all controlled from London under British maritime or admiralty law. The Queen in Revelation 18. When Revelation chapter 18 is speaking about a queen and every shipmaster and all the company in ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea and thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Is not the writer speaking about the British Queen? After all, it is her, City of London Merchant Bankers and Alpha Course false prophets at Holy Trinity Brompton who are using their sorceries to deceive the world, not to mention her temple priests in the city treasury who worship Mercury and Neptune and have turned her city corporation into a modern Roman den of thieves at the Bank of England and Guildhall. As Britain is broken up into regions, like all the EU countries, and effectively abolished under the European Union regionalization process, the City of London Corporation will become a separate region of the EU. When this process is fully completed, the city will be the only region in Britain left with any real power and will become like a little horn on the EU beast, since through its financial power, it already indirectly controls Europe and the world. How long this will continue for may be open to debate, but Revelation 18, chapter 7 to 9 warns, "For in 1 hour is thy judgment come." Surely there is a time coming in the not too distant future when these hypocritical Church of England, temple priests, treasury leeches, alpha sorcerers, and knights of the realm are going to be violently cast out of the temple. That is the end of chapter 11 in Hidden Secrets of the Alpha Course that is posted on my website, genuinechristianitynow.com. You would do well to carefully read this entire volume. The call-in number is 608-433-9306. Anyone that cares to discuss any of the issues that I just read through in Chapter 11 about Anglo-American Protestant Nazis being led by, at that time, 2005, by the Queen of Great Britain and all the ships of the sea that she ruled over. Chapter 12 is a very interesting chapter as well. It's titled City of London Corporation. You see, ladies and gentlemen, there is London, which is also rightly called Greater London, which is a massive city with many, many suburbs. And then there is the City of London Corporation, which is essentially a square mile within this massive area called London. Anyway, Chapter 12 is titled City of London Corporation. And from Chapter 11, you can clearly determine that there are people that are Jews that are Nazis, or at least carrying out the will of a Nazi. And after realizing that they are carrying out the will of a Nazi, they have no moral high ground as long as they continue in the position they're in, because each and every one of them can resign, or they can stand in the resistance against this terrible, evil, vicious, murderous wickedness. It's up to each man to make his own decisions in life of whether he desires to be with the Lord Jesus Christ in paradise after he enters the spirit world, after the flesh and the bones fall to the ground, or if he desires to be cast into the fires of hell for all eternity. That's a choice every man has to make. I won't speak for women. I'm not a woman. I'm a man. Chapter 12, City of London Corporation. Without a basic understanding of the City of London Corporation, its massive financial power, and its spiritual wickedness, one cannot properly understand how evil the perpetuators of the Alpha Course really are. Firstly, it must be remembered that the City of London is structured not only as a huge private corporation, it is also a giant Masonic lodge. This will become much plainer as we continue. The City of London Corporation is a private, independent, sovereign state occupying approximately 1 square mile within the heart of the Greater London area inside the old Roman walls of London. It is a separate, self-contained kingdom all of its own in the center of London. Like Vatican City, it even has its own police force. The Lord Mayor, who is elected once a year, is its supreme ruler. Its resident population of about 5,000 rises to about 2 million during the week when people surge in and out each day to work. The financial center of Europe, and indeed the entire world, it is often termed the wealthiest square mile on earth. At its core is the massive Bank of England, around which is the control center of a host of giant international Jewish banks, including the Rothschilds, that control directly or indirectly the finances of every nation on the globe. Through the Bank of England, the Rothschilds, and their many subsidiaries, the city privately owns and controls the U.S. Federal Reserve Banking Corporation, the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland, the European Central Bank, the Vatican Bank, the IMF, World Bank, and many others. Through its numerous subsidiaries via financing global corporate privatizations, mergers, and takeovers, it has literally now become the head office of the Corporation of Earth. Now, this is key. This is important. Listen carefully and closely. As the result of a gentleman's agreement between the sovereign and the city, merchants and bankers made hundreds of years ago, the Lord Mayor is officially head of the corporation and is allowed to operate independently of the sovereign. However, the wealth of the world held in the corporation ultimately is the sovereign's, because should the gentleman's agreement break down, the sovereign has power to rescind the corporation's independence. The Queen sometimes refers to the corporation as the firm. While ostensibly the power of the monarchy appears to be diminishing, as the Queen voluntarily gives the Commonwealth countries their independence, and she works toward abolishing the sovereignty of Britain, as the UK is divided up into regions of the European Union, her City of London Corporation is quietly mortgaging and taking over the wealth of the world. Lord Mayor. Elected once a year, the Lord Mayor is the official monarch and head of the City of London, who rules his banking empire on behalf of the sovereign. He even has his own state coach, insignia, scepter, sword, great mace, etc. The present Lord Mayor's coach was built in 1757 for the then Lord Mayor, Sir Charles Esgill, and like the hypocritical sovereign's gold state coach, is decorated with Babylonian pagan mythological panels as well. The Lord Mayor wears many hats during his term of service. He is chairman of the Court of Aldermen and the Court of Common Council, chief magistrate of the city, and the tenant of the Mansion House, which has the only justice court in a private residence. He is trustee of St. Paul's, chancellor of the City University, governor of the Royal Hospital, and coroner of London. He has the right of audience to the sovereign and the rank of an earl during his year in office. He announces the death of a monarch, and after proclaiming the new one, carries the crystal scepter in the coronation procession, and he is entrusted under the monarch's sign with the password to the tower. After greeting the queen at Temple Bar with the sword and the keys of the city, he is then responsible for her safety and will sit on her right side at table, above the heir to the throne, a privilege granted by Henry V. On goodwill visits abroad, he enjoys a unique role as a non-political national figure on the international stage, and at home entertains distinguished visitors on behalf of the sovereign and the government. The Prime Minister makes a major policy statement at his first Guildhall banquet, and at one of his last Mansion House dinners, the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the Governor of the Bank of England both make important financial speeches. Michaelmas Day, 29 September, is the last hurdle for any aspiring Lord Mayor. Prior to this, a candidate must have stood for selection on three previous occasions as a freeman, as an alderman, and as sheriff. Four, if he was previously a common councilman, so the time span is at least 10 or 15 years. Election day starts with a service in St. Lawrence Jewry, and while the corporation dignitaries, officials, and the Masonic masters of the companies and their ladies are in church, Guildhall has been filling up. All 22,000 liverymen are entitled to vote, and about 1,000 usually pass through the wooden wickets into Guildhall to do so. A month later, the Lord Mayor-elect goes to the House of Lords to hear from the Lord Chancellor the sovereign's approval of the citizen's choice. On the second Friday in November, he takes office at the ceremony of silent change. Taking the seat of the outgoing Lord Mayor, he accepts in silence the scepter, the seal, the city's purse, the sword, and the mace. Thousands of Londoners line the streets next day when the new Lord Mayor shows himself to the people. But his legal duty is to sign a declaration before Her Majesty's judges at the law courts in the Strand. This sheet of vellum depicts the royal arms, the city arms, and the arms of the new Lord Mayor and his livery company. So you've learned something about London and the City of London Corporation that has been destroying freedom and destroying lives worldwide for centuries and centuries. Next week, I'll continue on at mayoral chain of office insignia at my website, book posted. It's at genuinechristianitynow.com. Now, you can read this through during the week, and I encourage you to do so.